foot of cackling fowl. Ciri cursed loudly, repeating a favourite saying of Vesemir's, which she did not entirely understand. Then she added a few words she had heard Yarp and Zigrin use, the meanings of which were a total mystery to her. With a kick, she dispersed the chickens, swarming towards the scattered grain, picked up the basket, turned it upside down, then twirled in a witch's pirouette, and threw the basket like a discus over the reed roof of the henhouse. She turned on her heel and set off through the temple park at a run. She ran lightly, skillfully controlling her breath. At every other tree she passed, she made an agile half-turn leap, marking slashes with an imaginary sword, and immediately following them with dodges and feints she had learned. She jumped deftly over the fence, landing surely and softly on bent knees.
"Jara!"
she shouted, turning her head up towards a window gaping in the stone wall of the tower.
"Jara, are you there? Hey, it's me!"
"Ciri?"
The boy leaned out.
"What are you doing here? Can I come up and see you?"
"Now? Well, all right then. Please do."
She flew up the stairs like a hurricane, catching the novice unexpectedly, just as, with his back turned, he was quickly adjusting his clothes and hiding some parchments on the table under other parchments. Jara ran his fingers through his hair, cleared his throat, and bowed awkwardly. Ciri slipped her thumbs into her belt and tossed her ashen fringe.
"What's this war everybody's talking about?" she fired. "I want to know. Please, have a seat."
She cast her eyes around the chamber. There were four large tables, piled with large books and scrolls. There was only one chair, also piled high.
"War?" mumbled Jara. "Yes, I've heard those rumours. Are you interested in it? You? No, don't sit on the table, please. I've only just got all the documents in order. Sit on the chair. Just a moment, wait, I'll take those books. Does Lady Yennefer know you're here?"
"No."
"Hmm. Or Mother Nenica?"
Ciri pulled a face. She knew what he meant. The 16-year-old Jara was the High Priestess's ward, being prepared by her to be a cleric and chronicler. He lived in Elender, where he worked as a scribe at the municipal tribunal, but he spent more time in Melitela's sanctuary than in the town, studying, copying, and illuminating volumes in the temple library for whole days and sometimes even nights. Ciri had never heard it from Nenica's lips, but it was well known that the High Priestess absolutely did not want Jara to hang around her young novices, and vice versa. But the novices, however, did sneak keen glances at the boy and chatted freely, discussing the various possibilities presented by the presence on the temple grounds of something which wore trousers. Ciri was amazed, because Jara was the exact opposite of everything which, in her eyes, should represent an attractive male. In Sintra, as she remembered, an attractive man was one whose head reached the ceiling, whose shoulders were as broad as a doorway, who swore like a dwarf, roared like a buffalo, and stank at 30 paces of horses, sweat and beer, regardless of what time of day or night it was. Men who did not correspond to this description were not recognised by Queen Calanthe's chambermaids as worthy of sighs and gossip. Ciri had also seen a number of different men, the wise and gentle druids of Angren, the tall and gloomy settlers of Sodden, the witches of Caer Morhen. Jara was different. He was as skinny as a stick inset, ungainly, wore clothes which were too large, and smelled of ink and dust, always had greasy hair, and on his chin, instead of stubble, there were 7 or 8 long hairs, about half of which sprang from a large wart. Truly, Ciri did not understand why she was so drawn to Jara's tower. She enjoyed talking to him. The boy knew a great deal, and she could learn much from him. But recently, when he looked at her, his eyes had a strange, dazed and cloying expression.
"Well?" She grew impatient. "Are you going to tell me or not?"
"There's nothing to say. There isn't going to be any war. It's all gossip."
"Aha," she snorted. "And so the Duke is sending out a call to arms just for fun. The army is marching the highways out of boredom. Don't twist things, Jara. You visit the town and castle. You must know something. Why don't you ask Lady Yennefer about it?"
"Lady Yennefer has more important things to worry about."
Ciri spat, but then immediately had second thoughts, smiled pleasantly, and fluttered her eyelashes.
"Oh, Jara, tell me, please. You're so clever. You can talk so beautifully and learnedly. I could listen to you for hours. Please, Jara?"
The boy turned red, and his eyes grew unfocused and bleary. Ciri sighed surreptitiously. Jara shuffled from foot to foot and moved his arms undecidedly, evidently not knowing what to do with them.
What can I tell you? It's true. People are gossiping in town, all excited by the events in Dol Anger. But there isn't going to be a war, that's for sure. You can believe me.
Of course I can, she snorted. But I'd rather know what you base this certainty on. You don't sit on the Duke's Council, as far as I know. And if you were made a voivode yesterday, then do tell me about it. I'll congratulate you.
I study historical treatises. Jara turned crimson. And one can learn more from them than sitting on a council. I've read The History of War by Marshal Pellegrim, Duke de Ruyter's Strategy, Bronnebor's The Victorious Deeds of Redania's Gallant Cavalrymen, and I know enough about the present political situation to be able to draw conclusions through analogy. Do you know what an analogy is?
Of course, lied Ciri, picking a blade of grass from the buckle of her shoe.
If the history of past wars, the boy stared at the ceiling, were to be laid over present political geography, it is easy to gauge that minor border incidents, such as the one in Dol Anger, are fortuitous and insignificant. You, as a student of magic, must, no doubt, be acquainted with the present political geography.
Ciri did not reply. Lost in thought, she skimmed through the parchments lying on the table and turned a few pages of the huge leather-bound volume.
Leave that alone! Don't touch it! Jara was worried. It's an exceptionally valuable and unique work.
I'm not going to eat it. Your hands are dirty.
They're cleaner than yours.
Listen, do you have any maps here?
I do, but they're hidden in the chest,
said the boy quickly. But seeing Ciri pull a face, he sighed, pushed the scrolls of parchment off the chest, lifted the lid, and started to rummage through the contents. Ciri, wriggling in the chair and swinging her legs, carried on flicking through the book. From between the pages suddenly slipped a loose page with a picture of a woman, completely naked, with her hair curled into ringlets, entangled in an embrace with a completely naked bearded man. Her tongue sticking out, the girl spent a long time turning the etching around, unable to make out which way up it should be. She finally spotted the most important detail in the picture and giggled. Jara, walking up with an enormous scroll under his arm, blushed violently, took the etching from her without a word, and hid it under the papers strewn across the table.
An exceptionally valuable and unique work, she jibed. Are those the analogies you're studying? Are there any more pictures like that in there? Interesting. The book is called Healing and Curing. I'd like to know what diseases are cured that way.
You can read the first runes.
The boy was surprised and cleared his throat with embarrassment.
I didn't know. There's still a lot you don't know.
She turned up her nose.
And what do you think? I'm not just some novice feeding hens for eggs. I am a wizard.
Well, go on, show me that map.
They both knelt on the floor, holding down the stiff sheet, which was stubbornly trying to roll up again, with their hands and knees. Ciri finally weighed down one corner with a chair leg, and Jara pressed another down with a hefty book entitled The Life and Deeds of Great King Radovid.
This map is so unclear. I can't make head or tail of it. Where are we? Where is Elenda?
Here, he pointed. Here is Temeria, this space. Here is Vachimer, our King Foltest capital. Here in Pontar Valley lies the Duchy of Elender. And here, yes, here is our temple.
And what's this lake? There aren't any lakes around here.
That isn't a lake, it's an ink blot.
Ah, and here. This is Sintra. Is that right?
Yes, south of Trans River and Sodden. This way, here, flows the River Yaruga, flowing into the sea right at Sintra. That country, I don't know if you know, is now dominated by the Nilfgaardians.
I do know.
She cut him short, clenching her fist.
I know very well. And where is this Nilfgaard? I can't see a country like that here. Doesn't it fit on this map of yours, or what? Get me a bigger one.
Jara scratched the wart on his chin. I don't have any maps like that.
But I do know that Nilfgaard is somewhere further towards the south. There. More or less there. I think.
So far?
Ciri was surprised, her eyes fixed on the place on the floor which he indicated.
They've come all the way from there, and on the way conquered those other countries.
Yes, that's true. They conquered Metina, Mecht, Nazaire, Ebbing, all the kingdoms south of the Amel Mountains. Those kingdoms, like Cintra and Upper Sodden, the Nilfgaardians now call the provinces. But they didn't manage to dominate Lower Sodden, Verden and Brugge. Here, on the Yrugur, the armies of the four kingdoms held them back, defeating them in battle. I know, I studied history.
Ciri slapped the map with her open palm.
Well, Jara, tell me about the war. We're nearly on political geography. Draw conclusions through analogy and through anything you like. I'm all ears.
The boy blushed, then started to explain, pointing to the appropriate regions on the map with the tip of a quill. At present, the border between us and the south, dominated by Nilfgaard, is demarcated, as you can see, by the Yrugur River. It constitutes an obstacle which is practically insurmountable. It hardly ever freezes over, and during the rainy season it can carry so much water that its bed is almost a mile wide. For a long stretch here, it flows between precipitous, inaccessible banks, between the rocks of Mahakam.
The land of dwarves and gnomes?
Yes, and so the Yrugur can only be crossed here, in its lower reaches, in Sodden, and here, in its middle reaches, in the valley of Dol Angra.
And it was exactly in Dol Angra that incident?
Wait, I'm just explaining to you that, at the moment, no army could cross the Yrugur River. Both accessible valleys, those along which armies have marched for centuries, are very heavily manned and defended, both by us and by Nilfgaard. Look at the map. Look how many strongholds there are. See, here is Verden, here is Brugger, here the Isles of Skellige.
And this, what is this? This huge white mark?
Jara moved closer. She felt the warmth of his knee.
Brokilon Forest, he said, is forbidden territory. The kingdom of forest dryads. Brokilon also defends our flank. The dryads won't let anyone pass. The Nilfgaardians either.
Ciri leaned over the map.
Here is Edirne and the town of Vengaberg. Jara, stop that immediately.
The boy abruptly pulled his lips away from her hair and went as red as a beetroot.
I do not wish you to do that to me. Ciri, I came to you with a serious matter. As a wizard to a scholar,
she said icily and with dignity, in a tone of voice which exactly copied that of Yennefer.
So behave!
The scholar blushed an even deeper shade and had such a stupid expression on his face that the wizard could barely keep herself from laughing. He leaned over the map once more.
All this geography of yours, she continued, hasn't led to anything yet. You're telling me about the Yrugur River, but the Nilfgaardians have, after all, already crossed to the other side once. What's stopping them now?
That time, hawked Jara, wiping the sweat, which had all of a sudden appeared on his brow, they only had Brugger, Sodden and Temeria against them. Now we're united in an alliance, like at the Battle of Sodden. The four kingdoms, Temeria, Redania, Edirne and Caidwin.
Caidwin, said Ciri proudly.
Yes, I know what that alliance is based on. King Henselt of Caidwin offers special secret aid to King Demavend of Edirne. That aid is transported in barrels, and when King Demavend suspects someone of being a traitor, he puts stones in the barrels, sets a trap.
She broke off, recalling that Geralt had forbidden her to mention the events in Caidwin. Jara stared at her suspiciously.
Is that so? And how can you know all that?
I read about it in a book written by Marshal Pelican, she snorted, and in other analogies. Tell me what happened in Dol Angren, or whatever it's called. But first, show me where it is.
Here. Dol Angra is a wide valley, a route leading from the south to the kingdoms of Lyria and Rivier, to Edirne, and further to Dol Blathanar and Caidwin, and through Pontar Valley to us, to Temeria.
And what happened there?
There was fighting, apparently. I don't know much about it, but that's what they're saying at the castle.
If there was fighting, frowned Ciri, there's a war already. So what are you talking about?
It's not the first time there's been fighting, clarified Jara. But the girl saw that he was less and less sure of himself.
Incidents at the border are very frequent, but they're insignificant.
And how come?
The forces are balanced. Neither we nor the Nilfgaardians can do anything. And neither of the sides can give their opponent a casus belli.
Give what?
A reason for war. Understand? That's why the armed incidents in Dol Angra are most certainly fortuitous matters. Probably attacked by brigands or skirmishes with smugglers. In no way can they be the work of regular armies, neither ours nor those of Nilfgaard, because that would be precisely a casus belli.
Aha, uh-huh.
Jara, tell me... She broke off. She raised her head abruptly, quickly touched her temples with her fingers and frowned. I've got to go, she said. Lady Yennefer is calling me. You can hear her. The boy was intrigued. A distance? How? I've got to go, she repeated, getting to her feet and brushing the dust off her knees. Listen, Jara, I'm leaving with Lady Yennefer on some very important matters. I don't know when we'll be back. I warn you, they are secret matters which concern only wizards, so don't ask any questions. Jara also stood up. He adjusted his clothing, but still did not know what to do with his hands. His eyes glazed over sickeningly.
Ciri? What? I
don't know what you're talking about, she said impatiently, glaring at him with her huge emerald eyes.
Nor do you, obviously. I'm off.
Take care, Jara.
Goodbye, Ciri. Have a safe journey. I'll be thinking of you.
Ciri sighed.
I'm here, Lady Yennefer.
She flew into the chamber like a shot from a catapult, and the door thumped open, slamming against the wall. She could have broken her legs on the stool standing in her way, but Ciri jumped over it deftly, gracefully executed a half pirouette, feigning the slash of a sword, and joyfully laughed at her successful trick. Despite running briskly, she did not pant, but breathed evenly and calmly. She had mastered breath control to perfection.
I'm here, she repeated.
At last. Get undressed and into the tub, quick.
The enchantress did not look round, did not turn away from the table, looked at Ciri in the mirror. Slowly, she combed her damp black curls, which straightened under the pressure of the comb, only to spring back a moment later into shiny waves. The girl unbuckled her boots in a flash, kicked them off, freed herself of her clothes, and with a splash landed in the tub. Grabbing the soap, she started to energetically scrub her forearms. Yennefer sat motionless, staring at the window and toying with her comb. Ciri snorted, spluttered and spat because soap had got into her mouth. She tossed her head, wondering whether a spell existed which could make washing possible without water, soap and wasting time. The magician put the comb aside, but, lost in thought, kept gazing through the window at the swarms of ravens and crows croaking horrifically as they flew east. On the table, next to the mirror and an impressive array of bottled cosmetics, lay several letters. Ciri knew that Yennefer had been waiting for them a long time, and that the day on which they were to leave the temple depended on her receiving these letters. In spite of what she had told Jara, the girl had no idea where and why they were leaving. But in those letters... Splashing with her left hand so as to mislead, she arranged the fingers of her right in a gesture, concentrated on a formula, fixed her eyes on the letters, and sent out an impulse.
"Don't you even dare," said Yennefer, without turning around. "I thought..."
She cleared her throat.
"I thought one of them might be from Geralt. If it was, I'd have given it to you."
The magician turned in her chair and sat facing her.
"Are you going to be long washing?"
"I've finished."
"Get up, please."
Ciri obeyed. Yennefer smiled faintly.
"Yes," she said. "You've finished with childhood. You've rounded out where necessary. Lower your hands. I'm not interested in your elbows." "Well, well, don't blush. No false shyness. It's your body, the most natural thing in the world, and the fact that you're developing is just as natural. If your fate had turned out differently... If it weren't for the war, you'd have long been the wife of some duke or prince. You realize that, don't you? We've discussed matters concerning your gender often enough, and in enough detail for you to know that you're already a woman. Physiologically, that is to say. Surely you've not forgotten what we talked about."
"No, I haven't. When you visit Jara, I hope there aren't any problems with your memory either."
Ciri lowered her eyes, but only momentarily. Yennefer did not smile.
"Dry yourself and come here," she said coolly. "No splashing, please."
Wrapped in a towel, Ciri sat down on the small chair at the magician's knees. Yennefer brushed the girl's hair, every now and again snipping off a disobedient wisp with a pair of scissors.
"Are you angry with me?" asked the girl reluctantly.
For going to the tower?"
"No, but Neneka doesn't like it. You know that."
"But I haven't... I don't care about Jara in the least.
Ciri blushed a little.
I only... Exactly, muttered the Enchantress. You only. Don't play the child, because you're not one anymore. Let me remind you. That boy slobbers and stammers at the sight of you. Can't you see that?
That's not my fault. What am I supposed to do?
Yennefer stopped combing Ciri's hair and measured her with a deep, violet gaze.
Don't toy with him. It's base.
But I'm not toying with him. I'm only talking to him.
I'd like to believe, the Enchantress said, as she snipped her scissors, cutting yet another wisp of hair which would not allow itself to be styled for anything in the world, that during these conversations you remember what I asked you.
I remember.
He's an intelligent and bright boy. One or two inadvertent words could lead him on the right track, to matters he should know nothing about. No one, absolutely no one, must find out who you are.
I remember, repeated Ciri. I haven't squealed a word to anyone. You can be sure of that. Tell me, is that why we have to leave so suddenly? Are you afraid that someone's going to find out I'm here? Is that why?
No, there are other reasons.
Is it because there might be a war? Everybody's talking about another war. Everybody's talking about it, Lady Yennefer.
Indeed, the magician confirmed coolly, snipping her scissors just above Ciri's ear. It's a subject which belongs to the so-called interminable category. There's been talk about wars in the past, there is talk now, and there always will be. And not without reason. There have been wars, and there will be wars. Lower your head.
Jara said that there's not going to be a war with Nilfgaard. He spoke of some sort of analogies. Showed me a map. I don't know what to think myself anymore. I don't know what these analogies are. Probably something terribly clever. Jara reads various learned books and knows it all, but I think it interests me. What do you think, Ciri? In Sintra, that time, Lady Yennefer, my grandmother was much cleverer than Jara. King Aist was clever too. He sailed the seas, saw everything, even a narwhal and sea serpent, and I bet he also saw many an analogy. And so what? Suddenly they appeared, the Nilfgaardians.
Ciri raised her head, and her voice stuck in her throat. Yennefer put her arms around her and hugged her tightly.
Unfortunately, she said quietly, unfortunately you're right, my ugly one. If the ability to make use of experience and draw conclusions decided, we would have forgotten what war is a long time ago.
But those whose goal is war have never been held back, nor will be, by experience or analogy.
So, it's true after all. There is going to be a war. Is that why we have to leave?
Let's not talk about it. Let's not worry too soon.
Ciri sniffed.
I've already seen a war, she whispered. I don't want to see another. Never. I don't want to be alone again. I don't want to be frightened. I don't want to lose everything again, like that time. I don't want to lose Geralt. Or you, Lady Yennefer. I don't want to lose you. I want to stay with you, and him, always. You will.
The magician's voice trembled a little.
And I'm going to be with you, Ciri. Always, I promise you.
Ciri sniffed again. Yennefer coughed quietly, put down the scissors and comb, got to her feet, and crossed over to the window. The ravens were still croaking in their flight towards the mountains.
When I arrived here, the Lady Magician suddenly said in her usual, melodious, slightly mocking voice, when we first met, you didn't like me.
Ciri did not say anything.
Our first meeting, she thought. I remember. I was in the grotto with the other girls. Hrosvitha was showing us plants and herbs. Then Yola the First came in and whispered something in Hrosvitha's ear. The priestess grimaced with animosity, and Yola the First came up to me with a strange expression on her face. Get yourself together, Ciri, she said, and go to the refectory quick. Mother Neneker's summoning you. Someone has arrived. Strange, meaningful glances, excitement in their eyes, and whispers. Yennefer. Magician Yennefer. Quick, Ciri, hurry up. Mother Neneker is waiting, and she is waiting. I knew immediately, thought Ciri, that it was her.
because I'd seen her. I'd seen her the night before in my dream. Her. I didn't know her name then. She didn't say anything in my dream. She only looked at me, and behind her, in the darkness, I saw a closed door.
Ciri sighed. Yennefer turned, and the obsidian star on her neck glittered with a thousand reflections.
You're right, admitted the girl seriously, looking straight into the magician's violet eyes. I didn't like you.
Ciri, said Neneka, come closer. This is Lady Yennefer from Vengerberg, mistress of wizardry. Don't be frightened. Lady Yennefer knows who you are. You can trust her.
The girl bowed, interlocking her palms in a gesture of full respect. The enchantress, rustling her long black dress, approached, took Ciri by the chin, and quite offhandedly lifted her head, turning it right and left. The girl felt anger and rebellion rising within her. She was not used to being treated this way, and at the same time she experienced a burning envy. Yennefer was very beautiful. Compared to the delicate, pale, and rather common comeliness of the priestesses and novices who Ciri saw every day, the magician glowed with a conscious, even demonstrative loveliness, emphasized and accentuated in every detail. Her raven black locks cascading down her shoulders shone, reflected the light like the feathers of a peacock, curling and undulating with every move. Ciri suddenly felt ashamed. Ashamed of her grazed elbows, chapped hands, broken nails, her ashen, stringy hair. All of a sudden, she had an overwhelming desire to possess what Yennefer had. A beautiful, exposed neck, and on it a lovely black velvet ribbon with a lovely glittering star. Regular eyebrows, accentuated with charcoal and long eyelashes. Proud lips, and those two mounds, which rose with every breath, hugged by black cloth and white lace.
So, this is the famous surprise.
The magician twisted her lips a little.
Look me in the eyes, girl.
Ciri shuddered and hunched her shoulders.
No, she did not envy Yennefer that one thing, did not desire to have it or even look at it. Those eyes, violet, deep as a fathomless lake, strangely bright, dispassionate and malefic. Terrifying.
The magician turned towards the stout high priestess. The star on her neck flamed with reflections of the sun beaming through the window into the refectory.
Yes, Neneka, she said. There can be no doubt. One just has to look into those green eyes to know that there is something in her. High forehead, regular arch of the brows, eyes set attractively apart. Narrow nose, long fingers, rare hair pigment. Obvious elven blood, although there is not much of it in her. An elven great-grandfather or great-grandmother. Have I guessed correctly?
I don't know her family tree, the High Priestess replied calmly. It didn't interest me.
Tall for her age, continued the magician, still appraising Ciri with her eyes.
The girl was boiling over with fury and annoyance, struggling with an overpowering desire to scream defiantly, scream her lungs out, stamp her feet and run off to the park, on the way knocking over the vase on the table and slamming the door so as to make the plaster crumble from the ceiling.
Not badly developed.
Yennefer did not take her eyes off her.
Has she suffered any infectious diseases in childhood?
Huh. No doubt you didn't ask her about that, either. Has she been ill since she's been here?
No.
Any migraines? Fainting? Inclination to catch cold? Painful periods?
No. Only those dreams.
I know.
Yennefer gathered the hair from her cheek.
He wrote about that. It appears from his letter that in Kaer Morhen they didn't try out any of their experiments on her. I would like to believe that's true.
It is. They gave her only natural stimulants.
Stimulants are never natural.
The magician raised her voice.
Never. It is precisely the stimulants which may have aggravated her symptoms in... Damn it. I never suspected him of such irresponsibility.
Calm down.
Neneka looked at her coldly, and all of a sudden, somehow oddly, without respect.
I said they were natural and absolutely safe. Forgive me, dear, but in this respect I am a greater authority than you.
I know it is exceedingly difficult for you to accept someone else's authority, but in this case I am forced to inflict it on you, and let there be no more talk about it.
As you wish.
Yennefer pursed her lips. Well, come on, girl. We don't have much time. It would be a sin to waste it.
Ciri could barely keep her hands from shaking. She swallowed hard and looked inquiringly at Neneka. The High Priestess was serious, as if sad, and the smile with which she answered the unspoken question was unpleasantly false.
You're going with Lady Yennefer now, she said. Lady Yennefer is going to be looking after you for a while.
Ciri bowed her head and clenched her teeth.
You are no doubt baffled, continued Neneka, that a mistress of wizardry is suddenly taking you into her care. But you are a reasonable girl, Ciri. You can guess why. You have inherited certain attributes from your ancestors. You know what I am talking about. You used to come to me after those dreams, after the nocturnal disturbances in the dormitory. I couldn't help you. But Lady Yennefer...
Lady Yennefer, interrupted the magician, will do what is necessary. Let us go, girl.
Go, nodded Neneka,
trying in vain to make her smile at least appear natural.
Go, child. Remember, it is a great privilege to have someone like Lady Yennefer look after you. Don't bring shame on the temple and us, your mentors, and be obedient. I'll escape tonight,
Ciri made up her mind.
Back to Cair Morhen. I'll steal a horse from the stables, and that's the last they'll see of me. I'll run away.
Indeed you will, said the magician under her breath.
I beg your pardon?
The priestess raised her head.
What did you say?
Nothing. Nothing, smiled Yennefer. You just thought I did. Or maybe I thought I did. Just look at this ward of yours, Neneka. Furious as a cat. Sparks in her eyes. Just wait, and she'll hiss. And if she could flatten her ears, she would. A witcher girl. I'll have to take her firmly in hand. File her claws.
Be more understanding.
The High Priestess's features visibly hardened.
Please, be kind-hearted and understanding. She really is not who you take her to be.
What do you mean by that?
She's not your rival, Yennefer.
For a moment, they measured each other with their eyes, the Enchantress and the Priestess, and Ciri felt the air quiver. A strange, terrible force between them, growing in strength. This lasted no more than a fraction of a second, after which the force disappeared, and Yennefer burst out laughing, light-heartedly and sweetly.
I forgot, she said. Always on his side, aren't you, Neneka? Always worrying about him, like the mother he never had.
And you're always against him, smiled the priestess, bestowing him with strong feelings, as usual, and defending yourself as hard as you can not to call the feelings by their rightful name.
Once again, Ciri felt fury rise up somewhere in the pit of her stomach, and her temples throbbed with spite and rebellion. She remembered how many times, and under what circumstances, she had heard that name, Yennefer, a name which caused unease, a name which was the symbol of some sinister secret. She guessed what that secret was.
They're talking quite openly in front of me, without any restraint, she thought,
feeling her hands start to shake with anger once more.
They're not bothered about me at all, ignoring me completely, as if I were a child. They're talking about Geralt in front of me, in my presence, but they can't, because I am...
Who?
You, on the other hand, Neneka, retorted the magician, are amusing yourself as usual, analysing other people's emotions, and on top of that, interpreting them to suit yourself.
And putting my nose into other people's business?
I didn't want to say that. Yennefer tossed her black locks, which gleamed and writhed like snakes.
Thank you for doing so for me. And now let us change the subject, please, because the one we were discussing is exceptionally silly, disgraceful in front of our young pupil. And as for being understanding, as you ask, I will be. But kind-hearted, with that, there might be a problem, because after all, it is widely thought I don't possess any such organ.
But we'll manage somehow.
Isn't that right? Surprise. She smiled at Ciri, and, despite herself, despite her anger and annoyance, Ciri had to respond with a smile, because the Enchantress's smile was unexpectedly pleasant, friendly and sincere, and very, very beautiful. She listened to Yennefer's speech with her back ostentatiously turned, pretending to bestow her full attention on the bumblebee buzzing in the flower of one of the hollyhocks growing by the temple wall.
"No one asked me about it," she mumbled.
"What didn't anybody ask you about?" Ciri turned in a half pirouette and furiously whacked the hollyhock with her fist. The bumblebee flew away, buzzing angrily and ominously.
"No one asked me whether I wanted you to teach me."
Yennefer rested her fists on her hips. Her eyes flashed.
"What a coincidence," she hissed. "Imagine that. No one asked me whether I wanted to teach you either. Besides, wanting has got nothing to do with it. I don't apprentice just anybody, and you, despite appearances, might still turn out to be a nobody. I was asked to check how things stand with you, to examine what is inside you and how that could endanger you. And I, though not unreluctantly, agreed.
But I haven't agreed yet."
The magician raised her arm and moved her hand. Ciri experienced a throbbing in her temples and a buzzing in her ears, as if she were swallowing, but much louder. She felt drowsy, and an overpowering weakness, tiredness, stiffened her neck and softened her knees. Yennefer lowered her hand, and the sensation instantly passed.
"Listen to me carefully, surprise," she said. "I can easily cast a spell on you, hypnotize you, or put you in a trance. I can paralyze you, force you to drink an elixir, strip you naked, lay you out on the table and examine you for hours, taking breaks for meals while you lie there, looking at the ceiling, unable to move even your eyeballs. That is what I would do with just any snotty kid. I do not want to do that to you, because one can see at first glance that you are an intelligent and proud girl, that you have character. I don't want to put you or myself to shame. Not in front of Geralt, because he is the one who asked me to take care of your abilities, to help you deal with them."
"He asked you? Why? He never said anything to me. He never asked me."
"You keep going back to that," cut in the magician. "No one asked for your opinion. No one took the trouble to check what you want or don't want. Could you have given cause for someone to consider you a contrary, stubborn, snotty kid whom it is not worth asking questions like that? But I'm going to take the risk, and I'm going to ask something no one has ever asked you. Will you allow yourself to be examined?"
"And what will it involve? What are these tests? And why?"
"I have already explained. If you haven't understood, that's too bad. I have no intention of polishing your perception or working on your intelligence. I can examine a sensible girl just as well as a stupid one."
"I'm not stupid, and I understood everything."
"All the better.
But I'm not cut out to be a magician. I haven't got any abilities. I'm never going to be a magician, nor want to be one. I'm destined for Geralt. I'm destined to be a witcher. I've only come here for a short period. I'm going back to Kaer Morhen soon."
"You are persistently staring at my neckline," said Yennefer icily, narrowing her violet eyes a little. "Do you see anything unusual there, or is it just plain jealousy?"
"That star," muttered Ciri. "What's it made of? Those stones move and shine so strangely."
"They pulsate," smiled the magician. "They are active diamonds, sunken in obsidian. Do you want to see them close up? Touch them?"
"Yes. No."
Ciri backed away and angrily tossed her head, trying to dispel the faint scent of lilac and gooseberries emanating from Yennefer.
"I don't. Why should I? I'm not interested. Not a bit. I'm a witcher. I haven't got any magical abilities. I'm not cut out to be a magician. Surely that's clear, because I'm... And anyway..."
The magician sat on the stone bench under the wall and concentrated on examining her fingernails.
"And anyway," concluded Ciri, "I've got to think about it."
"Come here. Sit next to me."
She obeyed.
"I've got to have time to think about it," she said hesitantly.
"Quite right."
Yennefer nodded, still gazing at her nails. "It is a serious matter. It needs to be thought over." Both said nothing for a while. The novices, strolling through the park, glanced at them with curiosity, whispered, giggled.
Well?
Well, what?
Have you thought about it?
Ciri leapt to her feet, snorted and stamped.
I...
she panted, unable to catch her breath from anger.
Are you making fun of me? I need time. I need to think about it for longer, for a whole day, and night.
Yennefer looked her in the eyes, and Ciri shriveled under the gaze.
The saying goes, said the magician slowly, that the night brings solutions. But in your case, surprise, the only thing night can bring is yet another nightmare. You will wake up again, screaming and in pain, drenched in sweat. You will be frightened again. Frightened of what you saw, frightened of what you won't be able to remember. And there will be no more sleep that night. There will be fear until dawn.
The girl shuddered, lowered her head.
Surprise.
Yennefer's voice changed imperceptibly.
Trust me.
The enchantress's shoulder was warm. The black velvet of her dress asked to be touched. The scent of lilac and gooseberries intoxicated delightfully. Her embrace calmed and soothed, relaxed, tempered excitement, stilled anger and rebellion.
You'll submit to the tests, surprise.
I will,
she answered, understanding that she did not really have to reply, because it was not a question.
I don't understand anything anymore, said Ciri. First you say I've got abilities because I've got those dreams, but you want to do tests and check. So how is it? Do I have abilities or don't I?
That question will be answered by the tests.
Tests, tests.
She pulled a face.
I haven't got any abilities, I tell you. I'd know if I had them, wouldn't I? Well, but if by some sheer chance I had abilities, what then?
There are two possibilities, the magician informed her with indifference as she opened the window. Your abilities will either have to be extinguished, or you will have to learn how to control them. If you are gifted and want to, I can try to instill in you some elementary knowledge of magic.
What does elementary mean?
Basic.
They were alone in the large chamber next to the library, in an unoccupied side wing of the building, which Neneka had allocated to the lady magician. Ciri knew that this chamber was used by guests. She knew that Geralt, whenever he visited the temple, stayed right here.
Are you going to want to teach me?
She sat on the bed and skimmed her hand over the damask eiderdown.
Are you going to want to take me away from here? I'm never going to leave with you.
So I'll leave alone, said Yennefer coldly, untying the straps of her saddlebags. And I assure you, I'm not going to miss you. I did tell you that I'll educate you only if you decide you want to. And I can do so here, on the spot.
How long are you going to teach me for?
As long as you want.
The magician leaned over, opened the chest of drawers, pulled out an old leather bag, a belt, two boots trimmed with fur, and a clay demijohn in a wicker basket. Ciri heard her curse under her breath while smiling, and saw her hide the finds back in the drawers. She guessed whose they were. Who had left them there?
What does that mean, as long as I want? She asked. If I get bored or don't like the work, we'll put an end to it.
It's enough that you tell me or show me.
Show you? How?
Should we decide on educating you, I will demand absolute obedience. I repeat, absolute. If, on the other hand, you get tired of it, it will suffice for you to disobey. Then the lessons will instantly cease. Is that clear?
Ciri nodded and cast a fleeting glance of her green eyes at the magician.
Secondly, continued Yennefer, unpacking her saddlebags, I will demand absolute sincerity. You will not be allowed to hide anything from me, anything. So, if you feel you have had enough, it will suffice for you to lie, pretend, feign, or close in on yourself. If I ask you something and you do not answer sincerely, that will also indicate an instant end to our lessons. Have you understood?
Yes, muttered Ciri. And that... sincerity. Does that work both ways? Will I be able to... ask you questions?
Yennefer looked at her, and her lips twisted strangely.
Of course, she answered after a while. That goes without saying. That will be the basis of the learning and protection I aim to give you. Sincerity works both ways. You are to ask me questions at any time, and I will answer sincerely. Any question? Any question. As of now? Yes, as of now. What is there between you and Geralt, Lady Yennefer? Ciri almost fainted, horrified at her own impertinence, chilled by the silence which followed the question. The enchantress slowly approached her, placed her hands on her shoulders, looked her in the eyes from up close and deeply.
Longing, she answered gravely. Regret, hope, and fear. Yes, I don't think I have omitted anything.
Well, now we can get on with the tests, you little green-eyed viper. We will see if you're cut out for this, although after your question I would be very surprised if it turned out you aren't. Let's go, my ugly one.
Ciri bridled.
Why do you call me that?
Yennefer smiled with the corners of her lips.
I promised to be sincere.
Ciri, annoyed, pulled herself up straight and wriggled in her hard chair, which, after many hours of sitting, hurt her backside.
Nothing's going to come of it,
she snarled, wiping her charcoal-smeared fingers on the table.
After all this, nothing. Nothing works out for me. I'm not cut out to be a magician. I knew that right from the start, but you didn't want to listen to me. You didn't pay any attention.
Yennefer raised her eyebrows.
I didn't want to listen to you, you say? That's interesting. I usually devote my attention to every sentence uttered in my presence and noted in my memory, the one condition being that there be at least a little sense in the sentence.
You're always mocking me,
Ciri grated her teeth,
and I just wanted to tell you, well, about these abilities. You see, in Kaer Morhen, in the mountains, I couldn't form a single witcher sign, not one.
I know. You know. I know. But that doesn't mean anything.
How's that? Well, oh, but that's not all.
I'm listening in suspense.
I'm not cut out for it. Can't you understand that? I'm too young.
I was younger than you when I started.
But I'm sure you weren't.
What do you mean, girl? Stop stuttering. At least one full sentence, please.
Because.
Ciri lowered her head and blushed.
Because Yola, Myra, Yurnid and Katya, when we were having dinner, laughed at me and said that witchcraft doesn't have access to me and that I'm not going to perform any magic because... because I'm... a virgin. That means...
I know what it means, believe it or not, interrupted the magician.
No doubt you'll see this as another spiteful piece of mockery, but I hate to tell you that you are talking a lot of rubbish. Let us get back to the test.
I'm a virgin,
repeated Ciri aggressively.
Why the tests? Virgins can't do magic.
I can't see a solution.
Yennefer leaned back in her chair. So go out and lose your virginity if it gets in your way so much, but be quick about it if you please.
Are you making fun of me?
You've noticed. The magician smiled faintly. Congratulations. You've passed the preliminary test in perspicacity. And now for the real test. Concentrate, please. Look. There are four pine trees in this picture. Each one has a different number of branches. Draw a fifth to fit in with the other four and fit in this space here.
Pine trees are silly,
decreed Ciri, sticking out her tongue and drawing a slightly crooked tree with her charcoal.
And boring. I can't understand what pine trees have to do with magic. What? Lady Yennefer, you promised to answer my questions.
Unfortunately, sighed the magician, picking up the sheet of paper and critically appraising the drawing. I think I'm going to regret that promise. What do pine trees have in common with magic? Nothing. But you've drawn it correctly and on time. In truth, excellent for a virgin.
Are you laughing at me?
No. I rarely laugh. I really need to have a good reason to laugh. Concentrate on the next page, surprise. There are rows of stars, circles, crosses and triangles drawn on it,
a different number of each shape in each row. Think and answer. How many stars should there be in the last row?
Stars are silly. How many? 3!
Yennefer did not say anything for a long time. She stared at a detail on the carved wardrobe door, known only to her. The mischievous smile on Ciri's lips started slowly to disappear, until finally it disappeared altogether, without a trace.
"No doubt you were curious to learn," said the magician very slowly, not ceasing to admire the wardrobe. "What would happen if you gave me a senseless and stupid reply? You thought, perhaps, that I might not notice, because I am not in the least interested in your answers. You thought wrongly. You believed, perhaps, that I would simply accept that you are stupid. You were wrong. But if you are bored of being tested and wanted for a change to test me, well, that has clearly worked, hasn't it? Either way, this test is concluded. Return the paper."
"I'm sorry, Lady Yennefer."
The girl lowered her head.
"There should, of course, be one star there. I'm very sorry. Please don't be angry with me. Look at me, Ciri."
The girl raised her eyes, astonished, because for the first time the magician had called her by her name.
"Ciri," said Yennefer, "know that, despite appearances, I get angry just as rarely as I laugh. You haven't made me angry, but in apologizing, you have proved I wasn't wrong about you. And now take the next sheet of paper. As you can see, there are 5 houses on it. Draw the 6th.
"Again? I really can't understand why.
The 6th house."
The lady magician's voice changed dangerously, and her eyes flashed with a violet glow.
"Here, in this space. Don't make me repeat myself, please."
After apples, pine trees, stars, fishes and houses, came the turn of labyrinths, through which she had to quickly find a path, wavy lines, blots which looked like squashed cockroaches, and mosaics which made her go cross-eyed and set her head spinning. Then there was a shining ball on a piece of string, at which she had to stare for a long time. Staring at it was as dull as dishwater, and Ciri kept falling asleep. Yennefer, surprisingly, did not care, even though a few days earlier she had scolded her grimly for napping over one of the cockroach blots. Poring over the tests had made her neck and back ache, and day by day they grew more painful. She missed movement and fresh air, and, obliged to be sincere, she immediately told Yennefer. The magician took it easily, as if she had been expecting this for a long time. For the next 2 days, they both ran through the park, jumped over ditches and fences, under the amused or pitying eyes of the priestesses and novices. They exercised and practiced their balance, walking along the top of the wall which encircled the orchard and farm buildings. Unlike the training in Kaer Morhen, though, the exercises with Yennefer were always accompanied by theory. The magician taught Ciri how to breathe, guiding the movement of her chest and diaphragm with strong pressure from her hand. She explained the rules of movement, how muscles and bones work, and demonstrated how to rest, release tension, and relax. During one such session of relaxation, stretched out on the grass and gazing at the sky, Ciri asked a question which was bothering her.
"Lady Yennefer, when are we finally going to finish the tests?"
"Do they bore you so much?"
"No, but I'd like to know whether I'm cut out to be a magician."
"You are.
You know that already."
"I knew from the start. Few people can detect the activity of my star. Very few. You noticed it straight away."
"And the tests?"
"Concluded. I already know what I wanted to know about you."
"But some of the tasks, they didn't work out very well. You said yourself that..." "Are you really sure? You're not mistaken. You're sure I have the ability?"
"I'm sure.
But, Ciri..."
The enchantress looked both amused and impatient. "From the moment we lay down in the meadow, I have been talking to you without using my voice. It's called telepathy. Remember that. And as you no doubt noticed, it has not made our talking together any more difficult."
"Magic."
Yennefer, her eyes fixed on the sky above the hills, rested her hands on the pommel of her saddle.
is, in some people's opinion, the embodiment of chaos. It is a key capable of opening the forbidden door, the door behind which lurk nightmares, fear, and unimaginable horrors, behind which enemies hide and wait, destructive powers, the forces of pure evil, capable of annihilating not only the one who opens the door, but with them, the entire world. And since there is no lack of those who try to open the door, someone, at some point, is going to make a mistake, and then the destruction of the world will be forejudged and inevitable. Magic is therefore the revenge and the weapon of chaos. The fact that, following the conjunction of the spheres, people have learned to use magic is the curse and undoing of the world, the undoing of mankind, and that's how it is, Ciri. Those who believe that magic is chaos are not mistaken. Spurred on by its mistress's heels, the magician's black stallion neighed lengthily and slowly made his way into the heather. Ciri hastened her horse, followed in Yennefer's tracks, and caught up with her. The heather reached to their stirrups. Magic, Yennefer continued after a while, is, in some people's opinion, art. Great, elitist art, capable of creating beautiful and extraordinary things. Magic is a talent granted to only a chosen few. Others, deprived of talent, can only look at the results of the artist's works with admiration and envy, can admire the finished work while feeling that without these creations and without this talent, the world would be a poorer place. The fact that following the conjunction of the spheres, some chosen few discovered talent and magic within themselves, the fact that they found art within themselves, is the blessing of beauty. And that's how it is. Those who believe that magic is art are also right. On the long, bare hill, which protruded from the heath like the back of some lurking predator, lay an enormous boulder supported by a few smaller stones. The magician guided her horse in its direction without pausing her lecture. There are also those according to whom magic is a science. In order to master it, talent and innate ability alone are not enough. Years of keen study and arduous work are essential. Endurance and self-discipline are necessary. Magic acquired like this is knowledge, learning, the limits of which are constantly stretched by enlightened and vigorous minds, by experience, experiments, and practice. Magic acquired in such a way is progress. It is the plough, the loom, the watermill, the smelting furnace, the winch and the pulley. It is progress, evolution, change. It is constant movement, upwards, towards improvement, towards the stars. The fact that following the conjunction of the spheres we discovered magic will one day allow us to reach the stars. Dismount, Ciri. Yennefer approached the monolith, placed her palm on the coarse surface of the stone, and carefully brushed away the dust and dry leaves. Those who consider magic to be a science, she continued, are also right. Remember that, Ciri. And now come here to me. The girl swallowed and came closer. The enchantress put her arm around her. Remember, she repeated. Magic is chaos, art, and science. It is a curse, a blessing, and progress. It all depends on who uses magic, how they use it, and to what purpose. And magic is everywhere, all around us, easily accessible. It is enough to stretch out one's hand. See? I'm stretching out my hand. The Cromlech trembled perceptibly. Ciri heard a dull, distant noise and a rumble coming from within the earth. The heather undulated, flattened by the gale which suddenly gusted across the hill. The sky abruptly turned dark, covered with clouds scudding across it at incredible speed. The girl felt drops of rain on her face. She narrowed her eyes against the flash of lightning which suddenly flared across the horizon. She automatically huddled up to the enchantress against her black hair, smelling of lilac and gooseberries. The earth which we tread, the fire which does not go out within it, the water from which all life is born and without which life is not possible, the air we breathe,
It is enough to stretch out one's hand to master them, to subjugate them. Magic is everywhere. It is in air, in water, in earth, and in fire. And it is behind